All right, today I need some intro music. Dick Dale, the undisputed king of surf guitar. I'm going to start with a little bit of a recapitulation of last time. I wish I had thought of this before, that I wouldn't have had to borrow Lon Duquette's DVD, but that was still, I'm sure you found that to be entertaining. Does anyone know what this is?
Schematic?
Yes, it's a schematic. And specifically, this is a schematic of the reverb amplifier AB763 produced by Fender Musical Instruments in the late 60s. And the schematic looks like a bunch of little black lines on white paper, but the actual twin reverb amp looks more like this. This, the guts looks like these little cylinders with wires attached to them. It's not too much the same. I kind of wanted to bring in the actual amp because I have one of these things, but it weighs about 85 pounds and is really hard to schlep around. Leanne would laugh at me if I did that.
You couldn't get her to carry it for the car for you, huh?
No. No, absolutely not. So this, what preceded the creation of this schematic was an idea by a man named Leo Fender. And what preceded Leo Fender's idea was a conversation, sort of, with Dick Dale, who at that time was, this is in the late 50s, early 60s, was playing to packed dance halls in Corona, California. And Dick Dale said, "Loud. Gotta be loud." And Leo Fender thought, "What do I know? What do I know that can make loud?" And so he thought about it, and he sent out the ideas that he had to the people that he had in his shop that were good at coming up with schematics. And they came up with a schematic, and they built a really loud amplifier. And the result of that in this world was something that looks sort of like this, though Dick Dale always played through dual showman. And what you just heard there, Miserloo, and some other songs that he's less famous for, but you know, you probably, if you ever saw Pulp Fiction, you know that Miserloo was the theme song for that, and it was actually what launched the fourth wave of surf music, which is something that I'm very fond of myself. But well, in any case, those are the four worlds of the Fender Twin Reverb. And so who can tell me from your recollections of last time which part of the Fender Reverb four worlds this is?
Yes, Yetzira.
That's right. This is Yetzira.
Yetzira.
Okay. Or Yetzira. Whichever you prefer. I have no preferences myself. This, if it were not on a piece of paper, would be the Asaya. Yeah, the earth plane one. The gotta be loud from Dick Dale.
That's brilliant.
That was the Atziluth. And Leo Fender provided the Briatic aspect of this by coming up with that, distilling that notion into something that then turned into the schematic and then turned into the real amplifier. Okay, so that was those are the four worlds. We had the four worlds of chairs the last time, and this time we have the four worlds of amplifiers. So how does this relate to what I'm going to be talking about this week, which is the personal evolution? Okay, so this may be something of a stretch, but perhaps not. So this is the schematic of the tree of life. It is not the real tree of life. It's a representation of that notion that is available in our minds. The real tree of life is us. It's not only us, it's everything you see here, everything that's out there in the world, and everything that's out as far as you can imagine in the universe. Not just imagine, but as far as you could go if you were capable of going there. So, what we have been doing here, and what people who have been studying Kabbalah before now have done, is to take this schematic representation and to map it onto their reality, to make it part of their body, their soul, and their mind. And that's what I am going to encourage you to do as you study Kabbalah, to make this schematic so much a part of you that it begins to work its magic on you and create the larger you that you really are, the expanded being. See, Evo often uses the term meat puppet to describe what it is that we are. So we are just a little tiny extrusion of the spiritual being that we really are. And the being that created us, or I should say that is the full expression of us, is much larger than we can possibly imagine while we are inhabiting these bodies. And this is by design. This is so that we have the experience of knowing a separate and individual existence. And that slowly, over our evolution as a being, as we go from lifetime to lifetime, we begin to wake up more and more to who we really are. And I do believe that you would not be sitting in this room if you had not awoken to a fairly high degree, to the existence of your true self, to the existence of the divine spark that animates who you are. That makes sense? Okay. So, originally it says evolution, awakening your spark. And that's a much kinder expression of what I originally had on there. What I originally said was evolution, it's your job. And, you know, I truly believe that to be so. But, you know, it's a little bit hard-ass. So I changed that around. So what I exhort you to do is to find every way that you can to wake up to the real you and to do something about it. And I'm going to discuss... This is going to be a little bit of a diversion from the path of Kabbalah here and into the more general idea of a spiritual evolution. And, you know, for those of you who went and saw Michael's class at Sacred Space, you can go to sleep now because he probably did a much better job than I'm going to do. But in any case, I've thought about this quite a lot, and I think I've picked out some good points that you might want to give some thought to. So, there is a wider universe than the one that we're generally aware of. A wider universe. And little by little, as you begin to explore a a spiritual existence. And, you know, I'm not going to say that relates just to being pagan or Wiccan or what have you, that any spiritual path that you seize on will lead you into a place where you become aware of something that is more than just the physical world. And I'm certain that there isn't any person sitting here today who does not believe that there's more to the world than the physical. So that's a premise that I think that we can fairly well agree on. The knowledge of this world is, in essence, it's always there. It's always around you. And I'm fond of saying, it's hidden in plain sight, because, you know, there will be things that you will walk past every day on your way to work or what have you that all of a sudden are there, and you wonder, has that always been there? And, you know, probably it has. Or there's something in a book that you read a second time and suddenly a concept, a huge concept, opens up into your mind that never was there before. And I think that's true of all manner of spiritual understandings, that they're right there, and it's just a matter of maybe turning your head a little bit, and suddenly you can see into an opening of the universe that has been there, but you weren't looking in quite the right direction. And I can remember moments like this in my life very clearly. I know exactly where I was, what I was doing, and I'm fairly certain that that's true of all of you to one extent or another, that you suddenly saw something that you know that the information was there, but you didn't see it quite in that way before. So that's where it starts. That's the little crack in the door of mundane thinking that spirit will make. So this can come in the form of an epiphany, an aha moment where you wake up to a new way of looking at things, and you know it's you're still you haven't blown your socks off and the top of your head is still intact and what have you, and that's a fairly common way of doing it. There's also the kind of thing that falls within the category of a religious or spiritual experience, which can be a lot more dramatic. And I have had experiences like that, but I had a tendency to discount them a little bit because the experience was preceded by the ingestion of a little pill. But, you know, nonetheless, I think that whether it comes through, and I think this is something that we touched on last time, whether it comes through pure, untouchable experience like meditation, or whether it comes through a short circuit in your brain, or fasting, or drugs, or what have you, they really all are openings into that larger universe that is mostly unavailable to us, and which I believe unavailable on purpose, as I've said, because spirit knows that we can only handle so much, and so we get that information a little at a time as we become ready for it. There's also the concept of enlightenment. I expect that everybody has a different idea of what this really means. We suppose that the great masters, people like the Dalai Lama, the what they call them, the fakirs or the fakers or whatever you wish, of India. Who can perhaps levitate, or can go without eating for years, or what have you, have achieved something called enlightenment. And you know, this is one of those things that you can stand in front of it and you can walk around it and look at it from different angles, and unless it's happened to you, you have no idea what it is. But once you have been enlightened to whatever degree, it's a something that you cannot become unenlightened.
And darkened,
exactly. You cannot become darkened. I guess unless something severely clouds you, like heroin or whatever. But the path to enlightenment is something that has been spoken. That volumes have been spoken about it, and I suspect that people have gone to the ends of the earth to find enlightenment, following the formula to do this, and haven't found anything near to it. I'm going to take a little bit of a detour here into a little story that was told during a seminar a few years ago at Free Spirit, and it really stuck with me. This was something about I think I mentioned this, the Indian principle of satsang, that idea of finding the true awareness behind your awareness. And the story goes more or less like this. I'll give you a very abbreviated version of it. A mouse and a muskox were very good friends in the village that they lived in, and they spent a lot of time together. And the mouse was a very happy-go-lucky fellow and would happily do anything that the muskox suggested. But the muskox was troubled and knew that there was some essence that was just out of reach for him. And so he decided that he would go off on a quest. And he traveled to the four directions, and he talked with great teachers and healers of all kinds, and he wanted to know what the mystery of the universe was, what that inescapable essence was, or ungraspable essence was. And finally, after many, many years, dispirited and discouraged, he returned to his home village, and he met up with his old friend the mouse, now white in the muzzle and quite near the end of his days, and he laid out his story. He said, "I've been everywhere that it is possible to be, and I've talked with all the wisest, and still there is something, some beauty, some greatness that I can't grasp." And the mouse said, "Oh, well, muskox, what you're speaking of is that wondrous perfume that is always about you, but you can't name it and don't know where it comes from. And I will tell you, it is you." So, the many years of questing brought him back to the one thing that he could never get any closer to, nor any further away from, and that was himself. So, the essence you are seeking is never any further away than yourself. Which brings us to the demons. And, you know, we all have our demons. Even Donald Trump has his demons, you know.
Maybe especially.
That would explain the hair.
Hiding that crown.
Yeah. So, it is supposed that when we come into this world that we are pure and complete, and from that moment on, it's all downhill. That as we as we come into this complex world that we're surrounded by things to be fearful of, and our parents and everyone around us instills us with sometimes a reasonable amount of fear about those things that are dangerous, like, don't put your hand on the stove, Johnny, because bad things will happen, and then you do it anyhow because, after all, you're a kid. And so you really learn what they were talking about. But there are all manner of other things that we are told to be fearful of, told to be ashamed of, told to never speak of, that are part of a cultural heritage that our parents, our elders, and we can't ever escape, or we can't easily escape. The actual mechanism of a learned unreasonable fear is that at some formative moment something happens. We have images that come into our brains, through our eyes, through our ears, and a shock of fear, and it burns, it brands that image, that sound, smell, or what have you, into our brain, so that whenever we see anything or hear or what have you, anything that resembles that, even slightly, it causes that reaction to come back before we can do anything about it. And part of the process of evolving into our true selves is to learn where these things are, to learn how to confront them and cope with them so that they don't have the power over us that they did formerly. The idea is that when you can finally get to the point where you own that part of yourself and you cherish it, even though it's a painful part, then it no longer has the kind of unreasoning power over you that it did formerly. There's an image that Leanne and I have about when we reach those places in our lives where we have those kinds of reactions to things, and that's, we call it the flat spot on the wheel. And I think you can probably relate to it. There's something that, it may be months apart, it may be years apart, but you encounter something that just pushes your buttons and you react and you do unreasonable things or say unreasonable things, and it seems like you cannot get around it. And These are the kinds of things that I truly believe are our main mission in this incarnation, that we have found that kind of thing that is most valuable to us. And if we can find what causes it and learn to embrace it, that lesson will be learned. And we can go on to the other ones that are deviling us. So I know that there are simple lessons, and if we can learn the simple lessons and then remember what we did to learn those lessons, that the harder ones will become easier to solve. I can't prove it.
Are you talking about are you talking about like learning about the way that you react to things and the reason why you react to them in a certain
way? Yeah, exactly.
So, it's like finding what pushes your buttons?
Pushes your buttons, or things like, another example of this is some people have the great misfortune of getting into poisonous relationships with other people over and over again in the same way. And it's something that it's something that they both need and desperately do not need to have. But until you can figure out what it is about that, that what causes the attraction that gives you something that you want, but at the same time punishes you terribly, you will do it over and over again. So that's that. In that wise, that is a flat spot on the wheel, and maybe it's maybe you should get a new wheel. No, I shouldn't say anything like that. But you know.
Thorne speaks of these things as they're parts of us that we may not be in conversation with because we dislike them or we don't understand them or we're afraid of them, so we push them down and don't look at them.
Mm-hmm.
And she speaks of coming into conversation with those parts of yourself that are hidden so that you can understand and incorporate them into you in a new way. They're not going to go away. But if, as she, her thing is, as long as you're talking, at least you have a hope of being able to communicate.
So, in case you don't know who Leanne is speaking of, this T. Thorne Coyle,
mm-hmm.
and you probably all do. Yeah. what is the book you can recommend for?
That one is Kissing the Limitless. That's
yeah.
the latest one.
Mm-hmm.
So, Mark, you're not talking about phobias, right?
Yeah.
That too.
Because it's something that phobias can paralyze you. If you encounter something that you have what is truly an unreasoning fear of at just the wrong moment, it could be deadly. So learning how to find where that phobia comes from and pull its stinger, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
is something that is a very important part of becoming more whole and evolving yourself. There's another part to this too, and that is that sometimes we punish ourselves over and over again for things that we think we're guilty of. The most poignant and difficult to overcome kind are those where we feel that we're responsible for someone's death, where you know we are by inaction we have caused someone that we loved to fall off the face of the earth when they, you know, we had nothing to do with it. And other kinds of things like breaking someone's heart or what have you, that we weren't really responsible for that, but still we blame them. We blame ourselves and over and over again whenever we encounter something that's similar to that, we feel these twinges of guilt. And if you can spend some time with this idea at a moment when you aren't you're not as susceptible to the huge emotional overload, and examine it and find out that there really wasn't anything that I could have done, so please let me forgive myself. That's another blockage that you can remove from yourself that will allow you to move forward on your path. So these are just, what I'm giving you is just some examples of things that each of us has our own set of demons. But one of the wondrous things I believe about the pagan spiritual path is that we encourage people to look at the darkness and not just turn towards the light. The darkness is very instructive. It always provides us with the things that we truly need to move beyond the burden of karma that holds us into our place on the wheel. So one by one, we get rid of the things that are holding us back, and eventually we fly free. Zoom! Psychic senses. This is a tough one for me because I don't really have a lot of psychic capability. I'm developing it a little bit at a time, but it's not a talent. It's not a talent. But it's something that when you can develop senses beyond the five senses that we're most familiar with, you begin to see that there is something beyond our physical universe. If you can begin to sense energy or sense the presence of other beings, it shows you that we live in a wider universe than the physical one. And there are means to develop these if you don't have the natural capability. Among these is learning a divinatory skill like tarot or casting runes or what have you. These open up the gateways to information that is a part of I've talked about this before, how with the knowledge of Kabbalah exists outside of time and space. It exists in the astral realm, and that by doing meditations and whatnot on the symbols of the spheres and the paths, that we begin to pull in information that exists out there. And the same thing is true for tarot, very much so, because of the rich symbolism that's associated with the cards over so many generations of card readers. Those kinds of things open us up to the symbolism that is always available to us. And it also gives us the confidence, once we allow ourselves to do it, it gives us the confidence to unlock our own capabilities of divining things. And people who are really good readers can unlock these things, unlock the information about other people, about what's going to go on sometime in the immediate future, without having to use any kinds of cards or runes or what have you. But these are a good place to start. It's like it's like practicing scales when you first learn to play the piano. It's something that's absolutely vital. It's boring, but you have to do it, and after a while you are freed from the tedium and the real information begins to come in. As I said, I don't really have too much in the way of a natural capability, and I know that there are people who do, and it's a two-edged sword, because while it's possible for people to have the ability to see what's going on in your life just by looking at you or what have you, it can at the same time hold you back from the kind of hard work that needs to be done on yourself. And so my advice to anyone who has some kind of psychism is that I congratulate you on having it, but don't use it as a crutch, because there are other things that by setting this aside and studying other modalities, studying other ways of looking at things, that you can learn that you would not learn through your natural talents. And part of, you know, part of this is also things that you can discover through meditation. And everyone, regardless of their level of psychic capability, can learn to meditate. And if, you know, I would be very surprised to learn that anyone here does not know how to meditate. So, but if you find it difficult, there are ways of improving this. And I strongly suggest that you start with the simple basics of watching your breath. And that's the one gift that we've been given in this body, is that we have the ability to not only breathe naturally, but breathe unnaturally. And if you can teach yourself to breathe in a regulated way and watch that breath as it goes in and out, it has the magical capability of taking you outside of that little monkey mind that's always chattering in there, and broaden out your awareness to the wider self, the real self. And that's when the stuff can come flooding in. And
the autonomic function of which we can have voluntary control.
Isn't it just the one? Is there any other autonomic function that we can?
Because you can't.
No,
but
you can't stop your heart.
You can't change your heart. You can't speed up your heartbeat unless you do something.
Yeah, exactly.
Externally,
mm-hmm.
to, I mean, you can.
Yeah, but you're not going to. You can't tell your heart by pumping iron or what have you that you're going to be beating at 108 beats per minute now. Whereas,
and now stop.
And now stop. Yeah.
Slow down's a better word.
But the,
yeah,
the two parts of the nervous system are the autonomic and the
voluntary. Oh, okay.
No, that's two parts of the autonomic, is the sympathetic nervous system. That's another thing. But,
oh, okay.
But the voluntary is you can. I can tell my hand to
mm-hmm.
make a fist.
Yes.
No, but.
But seldom does your
heartbeat,
does your right exactly
respiration. Movement, digestion,
mm-hmm.
all those things
yeah.
are controlled by the part that we have no conscious control over,
except
breathing.
Right. And that's why, you know, and that's why it's an important gift, and it's the thing that we can use to unlock all of the other stuff. So it's not just us. We are surrounded and intermingled with all kinds of other beings. See him? No, neither do I. Oh, well. Or perhaps some of us do. I don't know.
Some of us do, some of us don't.
And, you know, actually, some of us do occasionally. And I occasionally do see other beings, but it's not very often. The
do you see auras?
I do, occasionally, but not all the time.
Twice in my whole life.
Twice, really?
Twice in my whole life.
Huh. It's more than twice, but not but not very often. But I do believe, even though I can't see them, I can hear them to a certain extent, but I can't really see them. I do believe that there are beings of all orders, from the lowest to the highest, that are available to us, that we can interact with in some fashion. And the some fashion that is easiest for most people is guided meditation. So if we've done that a little bit here, and I know that you've most likely done it to a greater or lesser extent in other classes, where, you know, you close your eyes, you regulate your breathing, you go inward, and there's suddenly a landscape that is brought to you through the words of someone who has crafted this meditation for you, and you begin to see and interact with other beings. Oh, so are these just figments of your imagination? To an extent. Are they other parts of yourself? I think it's inarguable that there are other parts of yourself that you interact with in the interplane. But are there also other beings that are not part of your imagination and not just other aspects of your personality? I think absolutely there are. And these beings are the ones that the ancient people had a lot less trouble talking about, a lot less trouble acknowledging to their friends and neighbors that, yeah, I was visited in my dreams by Apollo last night, or what have you. And they will say, yeah, that's what happened. I have no doubt about it. And instead of laughing behind their hands, which is what we in this culture have been taught is the appropriate reaction to someone talking about speaking with the gods or speaking with angels or demons or what have you. And there might be, initially, when you first begin to do this, there might be some reticence to believing that what you're experiencing is something that is due to interacting with an actual other being. Eventually, you will have an experience, if you keep at it long enough, you will have an experience that will demonstrate to you clearly that this could not have been something that I'm making up. This is something that really happened, that I saw this being on the inner plane and they told me something that they should not, you know, that I should not have known just through my own learning. And when that switch is turned, that's another thing that you can never unlearn. And from that, when you can go forward from that point and deliberately engage with specific beings, whether that be the gods, god forms, land spirits, angelic forms, and so forth, there are things that can be brought into your spiritual path, your path of learning and evolution, that are available through no other means. And I believe, I've also read, so I read from a venerated teacher like Dion Fortune, that when we begin to wake up to our true spiritual nature, that there are beings that are higher level beings that are saying, "All right, he woke up! Let's see, hey Mark, can you hear me?"
And do they say to each other, "Watch what I can make Dark Knight do on Sunday"?
Did you hear what just came out of?
Talk to people.
Did you hear what just came out of his mouth? So I do believe that we are kind of a project for beings that are at a higher level of evolution, some of them, and either individually or collectively, especially when we get together in groups and all tend to believe the same thing and tend to venerate the same gods or what have you, they're very, very much interested in our doing that and tend to...
Some of them are. Some are not.
And some, well... That's another matter, and I was going to touch on this, is that this is something that Ivo has brought up. He said that just as we have factions that pull this way and that way in order for our political system to work in alignment with their vision versus their vision, that there are analogs to this in the spirit realm, that there are higher plane beings that think that humanity ought to evolve this way as opposed to this way.
Or not at all.
Yeah, exactly, not at all. So maybe it's a luck of the draw what kind of being you happen to key into. I personally think that the beings that are cheering on from the sidelines, the organization that we belong to, the Assembly of the Sacred Wheel, are evolving us in a good direction, and I'm willing to go along with that. What was the other thing?
Speak about your power over dealing with beings who are not incarnate.
Yeah, that was point number three on this D3 on the thing here. So, sort of. So let us say you have, if you have decided that you would like to contact another being, and you go inward and wander out onto the astral plane and say, Yo, gods, you out there? And somebody shows up. And they look like your idea of a particular god or goddess. How do you know? The simplest way is to ask. And we have had a clear demonstration in one of the classes that we attended a couple of years ago that if you don't, you can get yourself into big trouble. In this particular instance, the teachers were using a very powerful technique to cause people to be possessed, for want of a better term, by god forms. And the god forms or whomever would speak through them, and they would interact with them and ask questions. And there was one who claimed to be, can we say whom?
Odin.
Odin, yes. There was one who claimed to be Odin. And the folks at Seely Court were very suspicious that this was an imposter due to some of the things that came through this person. And they asked some pointed questions that Odin should have been able to answer very simply. And the being gave the wrong answers. So if you encounter a being on the inner plane, it's not impolite to say your name to me and tell me of your attributes and ask some questions that you know that they should be able to answer in a certain way. And this is a matter of personal safety. Because if you let yourself become involved with a being who does not truly have your interest or the interest of your group or the interest of our species at their core, then it can lead to, at very least, troubled sleep, and sometimes it can lead to insanity and death. So, you know, I'm not warning you against doing this at all, because it's probably fairly rare that you would encounter someone truly malefic that was trying to get at you. But it's incumbent on you to make certain that you know who you're dealing with when you're on the inner plane. Just in the same way, if you're walking down an unfamiliar city street, if somebody comes up to you and starts asking you for stuff, make sure you know that they're on the up and up.
Yo, Hearn, you got ID?
Do not go
bungee jumping with strangers who you have never seen in this activity before.
Especially if
they're
laughing behind their hand.
Yeah, can't they lie? Right.
They can lie, yeah. Which you know, but
so what do you do with them?
Yeah.
You mean to ask them, how do you know that they're telling you the truth when they answer?
I would encounter them more than once before I took anything for granted. You know, just have lots of visits. And you, as a being of this plane, the physical plane, you are in charge. You live here. They do not. However, if you always meet them on the astral, that's their spot. Mm-hmm. So you have to be aware.
Mm-hmm. Another thing is you can develop a personal symbol, something which is something that has a great deal of meaning to you, something that perhaps relates to your heritage, and meditate on this symbol, invest it with as much power as you can, and if you encounter a being that you are fairly certain does not have your interests at heart, bring the symbol out and interpose it between yourself and the being. And this should, unless they're really powerful, this should make them go away. And I've done this. I have developed my own personal symbol, and I know where it lives, and I know what to do with it. And actually, I encountered being whose reality I questioned, and I zapped them, and they actually were legit. They were kind enough to come back and forgive me. Yeah, but it did prove that the pepper spray worked. Yeah.
And trust your gut.
Yes, and trust your gut. Gut's got a lot of intelligence to it.
But your first reaction was?
My first reaction was defense.
But isn't that sort of, I struggle with this because for a long time I have been having a lot happen in a very short amount of time. And I keep pushing it away from some remnant of, I don't know, that Judeo-Christian concept of possession, you know, and like, this can't be, it doesn't fit with my vision of myself, who my
that's a tough hurdle to clear.
You know, gone through the same thing, multiple questions, multiple experiences to try and convince myself, when in reality, part of realizing that for me and letting go of that little piece of control, personal control for me, was the ultimate in understanding many things. So I guess my question is, I realize that what you're saying is don't be willy-nilly, for lack of a better term, on who you're encountering, and don't trust everything that you see. But in the same token, I myself have seen the learning stalled as a hindrance because I'm too protective of that, and feeling like I have to surround myself with people I trust that I can ask these things of. You know,
well, I would say that
that's
probably for the short run. That's probably the best bet. Is that if you are uncertain whether the beings that you're encountering are good for you, go in a group. Get a teacher whose talents and perceptions you trust. And go inward with them, and if they say you're okay, then trust. Do your best to trust, and eventually you'll get to the point where you can do it on your own. That's out of all of the things that there are that hinder one from pursuing your hopes and dreams on your spiritual path are doubt and distrust. And they will always show their ugly heads, even though you have thought you conquered them long since. And it's very freeing when you can get to the point where you say, you know, I no longer doubt this. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's something that didn't happen like that. Maybe it's something that by walking down this path a certain distance, you look back and you say, oh yeah, you know, that used to be a big deal for me, and it's no longer. Mm-hmm. So perhaps you can work through it.
I do think that it's healthy that way. For somebody of my nature, it was the only way to
to get over that hurdle, was to develop trusting relationships and talk and explore ways of making those encounters with people that, you know, I felt knowledgeable teachers. And I'm sure there are many other people in this room who probably, you know, like me and say, oh, this happened, but I can't tell anybody because I don't know if that's a good thing. Not yet.
Okay.
And then you
seek
out that person.
This is a very freeing feeling to know that there are people that don't think you're crazy when you're talking about stuff like this, and who actually have enough background in the subject and that can ask you questions that allow you to see aspects of it that perhaps you wouldn't be able to see on your own.
Or in the case of some people, can help you sort out the things that your mental condition are telling you from things that are actually standing there talking to you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And even validation. I mean, I've gotten incredible validation from people in this room about things that I have happened. It's huge. And
yes.
What a joy.
Yes. Yes. Things like doing a group ritual that involves a guided meditation or just a shared visioning, and to be able to, when you come back into normal consciousness again, to discuss the things that you've seen and find that other people are seeing very similar, if not exactly the same things, and that's another important lesson that I've had in the course of my education is that what I'm seeing, it's more than just my own little twiddlings in my head. So,
path of initiation and then a quick break.
Yeah, I think so.
And then
so.
We'll come back to the tree a little.
I think so. Yes. So, the path of initiation is something that is not for everyone. It's something that I expect that as we go through our lifetimes, though, that eventually we get to the point where some additional step needs to be taken in order to both take us to the next higher level in the path or acknowledge that we have reached that level so that we can move on to the level that goes beyond it. I believe that initiation is a lot more than just doing a ritual and saying a bunch of words over somebody. That it's a lot more than reading a bunch of books and sewing up a ritual robe and gathering tools and things like that, which is in the assembly, that's what we have to do in order to take our first degree initiation. And you know, all of these things are important, don't get me wrong, but they are not the initiation. The initiation is a change which takes place in your energy, in your psyche, that opens up part of you to a new level of spiritual awareness. It's something that I would suggest anyone who desires to initiate consider very carefully, that it's going to cause changes in your life. That one of the big things about moving through our levels of evolution is that we discover that there are parts of ourselves that have no place in our lives, that are poisons, that are blockages to being able to do the things that we would like to be able to do, but for some reason we're still tied to a pattern of behavior or a habit of mind. And if you decide that you are going to follow a path of initiation, you should be aware that sometimes you're going to have to give up things that you believe, that you believe right now, that you love dearly, but which have no place in your real higher self. And it can be wrenching. And sometimes the things that we must sacrifice are great personal losses, the death of a loved one, the loss of an important relationship, the dislocation from a home that we love. But I choose to believe that even as difficult and unsettling and tragic in some cases as these things can be, that they are all really necessary. And we might not know exactly why they're necessary for years, but we can look back on things and say, oh yeah, if I had proceeded in this direction, or if I hadn't let go of that thing when I did, I would be nowhere near where I am today. So, I very much encourage everyone who wishes to pursue a path of personal evolution, at least give some serious consideration to going through an initiatory program, and be choosy, because there are a lot of people who can claim that they can give you an initiation, and who have never been through one themselves, so they don't really know what they're talking about. And I also, though there are people who are part of organized groups who poo-poo the idea that it's possible to self-initiate, I think it is definitely possible, but it's a much harder and longer road than most people would say. So this is another one of those things where I do truly believe that beings, higher beings, are watching out for us and steering us towards our eventual initiation into the higher degrees. Now, I believe you may recall that we've spoken about the lightning flash on the tree. The big zap that comes down from the top. And I think I also said that if you follow it backward, it's the same path, but it's called the path of return. And this return, which means return to the source, and the source being Keter, is the path that we follow as we initiate. And there are different schools assign different levels on the tree to their degrees of initiation, and I am not about to speculate on what the real levels are, but I do know that as we initiate, we become aware of a wider understanding of the universe, and that this is something that is integral to understanding our lives in relationship to the Tree of Life. So, with that, unless there are any questions, let us break.